An Osho Talk. The great Zen master, Tahui, reflections on the transformation of an intellectual to enlightenment. Number 21.
Understand right where you are. If you want to study this path, you must understand right where you are. As soon as you rely on the slightest knowledge, you miss the scene right where you're standing. When you've completely comprehended the scene right where you are, then all kinds of knowledge, all without exception, are things right where you are. Thus the patriarch said, at the very moment one speaks of knowledge, knowledge itself is mind, and this very mind itself is knowledge. Since knowledge is right now, if right now you don't go another moment, but do away with your knowledge right where you are, then you'll join hands and walk along together with the patriarchs. If you cannot yet be like this, don't go wrong in your knowledge.
Tahui is learning every day. The language of the mystics. Few hangovers are still there. But they are only because of old habits. He has come to the new experience, but he has not yet clarified his old language. He will manage to do it, because if you can manage to experience the truth, you cannot go on continuing knowledge, words and language accumulated before you became enlightened. Few days they linger on their own momentum. But whatever he is trying to say now is not of the intellect. Intellect never speaks that way. The intellectual approach is purely verbal and empty. The experiential approach is non-verbal, but so full, so pregnant with immense meanings, significances, and indications of your future growth. This sutra this morning is understand right where you are. Mind is never where you are. He is always wandering. Running in all directions. Even if you may be sitting in a lotus posture like Gautam Buddha with your closed eyes, that does not mean you are meditating. You may be thinking of all rubbish and garbage things. Your mind is not changed just because your body is just because you are sitting in a certain posture. This has caused a great misunderstanding for those who have been following the path. Your body posture does not change your mind. But if your mind changes, your body posture automatically changes. Seeing this again and again, a vast majority of seekers starting from the other end, because body is visible, the mind or no mind are not visible. And it was a logical understanding that sitting in a certain pose, you will attain to a certain state of mind. It is not so. Millions of followers of yoga are under the same misimpression and misunderstanding. If you move to the no mind in utter silence, your body is bound to become still, unmoving. The body carries your tensions, and when you are relaxed inside, the body immediately reflects your relaxation. But not vice versa. You can distort your body in strange postures, hoping that enlightenment will come. I have never seen a single yogi, and I have been in search, looking in the Himalayas, and all over the country, they are perfect in their gymnastics. They could have joined any circus and would have impressed the people by their performance. But inside they are very ordinary, the same ignorance, the same unawareness. It is now my considered opinion that if the inner changes, the outer will follow change. The outer is not essential. It is just a shadow of the inner. But if you change the outer, there is no necessity for the inner to change. Tahui says, understand right where you are. It does not matter where you are, in the marketplace, working as a carpenter, or as a doctor, or as a surgeon. Whatever your profession, whatever your activity, understanding has to come to you amidst the hubbub of the world. You should not escape to the mountains, to the Himalayas, to attain to understanding. Himalayas can't give it to you. But they can give something which can keep you under fallacy your whole life. Deep in the Himalayas there is eternal silence. Snow that has never melted. You will not find even birds. The cold is so much. Everything is absolutely quiet. This quietness of the Himalayas has been attractive for centuries. Because surrounded by this quietness and silence and serenity, you start feeling yourself becoming silent. But this silence is fallacious. It is only a reflection of a vast surrounding circumstance. Many people who have gone to the Himalayas are afraid to come back to the world. And I have asked them why you are afraid. You have attained silence. Now the world cannot take it away, but they know better. Once in a while when people come to them, very trivia can make them disturbed. Somebody traveling in the Himalayas comes to the cave of a yogi, but does not touch his feet, and there is anger immediately arising in him. It is just the opportunity that he is missing. He has not gained anything. Tahui is right, don't go anywhere. Understanding has to be acquired wherever you are. Then you can depend on it. You can rely on it. It will be with you wherever you will be. Nothing can disturb it, because you have gained it amongst all disturbances. If you want to study this path, you must understand right where you are. Your body is in one place, your mind is roaming all over the world. This is not the way of the seeker. Your mind should also be where your body is. For example, you are here now. Your body certainly is here. But unless you fall into a deep, silent communion with me, and your mind is utterly quiet, receptive, with no ideas of its own, no prejudices, then your mind will also be here now. If you can keep this state moment to moment, the enlightenment is not far away. It can happen any moment. It happens when your body and mind are in such a harmony. In the present, in this moment, you give opportunity for your ultimate potential to explode. But mind's ways are very strange, very subtle, very cunning. It starts making a goal of enlightenment. Enlightenment is not a goal. It starts thinking in terms of ambitions. Enlightenment becomes its ambition. And ambition needs time. Ambition needs future. Ambition needs tomorrows. So you may be sitting silently in meditation, but your mind is far away, searching for enlightenment. It is not different from any other ambition. Ambition for money, ambition for power, ambition for respect. It does not matter at all what is the object of your ambition. Every object of your ambition takes you away from your enlightenment. Nothing can take you to the enlightenment, because enlightenment is your nature. A man completely drunk, staggering, somehow reached in the middle of the night, but he could not figure out whether this house is his or somebody else. Looks like it is his, but with no certainty. He knocked on the door. An old woman, his mother, opened the door, and again the same problem. The old woman looks like his mother. But only looks like. He fell into her feet and started telling her, "Help me to find my home. Help me to find me. My mother, she must be waiting." A crowd gathered and they were laughing that this is strange. He is holding her mother's feet and asking the mother that she should help to find her mother. And she must be knowing his house, because he lives in this neighborhood somewhere. And then another drunkard came with a bullock cart and he said, "Don't waste your time, just come into my bullock cart and I will take you to your house and to your mother." Now, the mother was trying hard, the neighbors were trying hard, that if you go into this bullock cart, that means seems to be more drunk than you are. Wherever he leads you, will be going away from your mother and from your house, because this is your house and this is your mother. Something similar is the case with human mind. It cannot feel at rest wherever it is. It is always looking the right place, the right experience. But it cannot be here, of course. How it can be here? Thousands of years of continuous teaching to people that you are sinners has made it a deep unconscious impression that as you are not right. Wherever you are not in the right place. All the religions have succeeded in only one thing, in rejecting yourself, your place, your time, your life. And they have all given you great ambitions. Ambitions for heaven. It is strange that nobody says to these religions that you are all against greed, and heaven does not mean anything but the ultimate greed. You are all against fear. You all want us to be fearless, but what is your hell and the hell fire? Between the hell and the heaven, they have taken away the reality of your being, the existential status where you are. Avoiding hell, you are running to catch hold of heaven, you are running. But that which you are running for is within you. And unless you stop running and drop all the ambitions for greed and power and prestige, and just relax into your ordinariness, then this very body, the Buddha, and this very place, the lotus paradise. That's what Tahui is saying. If you want to study this path, you must understand right where you are. Everything is there, wherever you are. The whole existence is centered there. As soon as you rely on the slightest knowledge, you miss the scene right where you are standing. Now, this is from a man of great knowledge, of great acquaintance with the scriptures, as soon as you rely on the slightest knowledge, you miss the scene right where you are standing, because knowledge is taking away your mind and creating a screen between you and the reality. It is like a cloud covering your eyes. You become interested in that knowledge and you forget your reality, your presence, your here-now-ness. When you have completely comprehended the scene right where you are, then all kinds of knowledge, all without exception, are things right where you are. You need not be worried. If you can discover yourself in the present moment, you are not only discovering your being, You are also discovering all the Buddhas of the past, of the present, of the future too. Because it is the same experience. It is the same music. It is the same dance. Finding it within yourself, you have become a contemporary of all the Buddhas of all the times. Thus, the patriarch, and by patriarch, Zen people refer to Bodhidharma. He was there. Main source from where others learned the art of being real, authentic, sincere, from whom people learned awareness. He was the man who introduced to China, India's greatest contribution to the world, the art of dhyana. Thus the patriarch said, at the very moment one speaks of knowledge, knowledge is itself is mind, and this very mind itself is knowledge. Since knowledge is right now, that's what I was saying, that his intellectual past still shadows his language. For example, first he said, if you want to study this path, that is the language of a teacher, not the language of a master. What a master has to do with studying? The master would have said, if you want to follow this path, and now, again, he has a misunderstanding. Although what he is saying is right, just his language is too much under the impact of his past. Since knowledge is right now, instead of knowledge, a man who has come to his own being will say, since knowing, not knowledge, and the difference is great, the word come from the same root, and I would like you to understand it clearly. Knowing is always in the present. Knowledge is always of the past. Knowledge means knowing has become part of your memory. It is no more alive, it is dead. It is no more breathing, it has no more any heartbeat. For example, when you are seeing a sunset and you are overwhelmed by its beauty, in that moment there is knowing. You don't even say to yourself, how beautiful. Because even that word, how beautiful, will be a disturbance. It will take you away from the present. You simply stand before the sun setting with all the colors spread over the horizon. Shadows, reflections in the ocean. It is so enchanting that you almost stop breathing. You are in a state of awe. Those few moments are knowing. Tomorrow you will say to somebody, what a beautiful sunset. I had seen that day before. That will be knowledge. Now it is only words. I have told you the story of Lao Tzu. He used to go in the mountains for a morning walk. An old friend used to follow him. One day the friend asked him, that I have a guest in my house and he also wants for the morning walk. Lao Tzu said, I have no objection. Just make it sure that he does not start talking. Knowing should remain knowing. It should not be converted into dead knowledge. He said, I will take care of it. He convinced his guest that it is a great opportunity to be for 2 hours in the morning with Lao Tzu. It is rare and invaluable. But the condition is, you should not speak. He said, that is not a problem. I should keep completely silent. And then they started. It was still dark when they reached to the peak of the mountain. The sun was rising. The birds started chirping. The trees started coming out of their sleep. Flowers all around, wild flowers, opened their petals and their fragrance. And the man forgot that he is not to suppose to speak. And he did not think that this is much speech. He simply said, how beautiful. Lao Tzu looked at his old colleague and friend with such stern eyes and when they were back he told his friend that please don't bring your guest again tomorrow because he is too talkative. And in 2 hours he has said only 2 words, how beautiful. Lao Tzu said to his friend that I was present, he was present, you were present, the sun was present, the songs of the birds were present, the fragrance of flowers was present. There is no need to say anything. I was also aware. I am not saying that it was not beautiful. I am saying that by saying it is beautiful, you have destroyed its multidimensional beauty into 2 ordinary words. You have made knowing into knowledge. The difference is very subtle. Knowing is a living, flowing experience, is still vibrating in your heart. Knowledge is of the past. It may be just 1 minute past. Knowledge is part of the memory. Knowing is part of awareness. So when he says, since knowledge is right now, he really means, since knowing is right now, because knowledge can never be right now. If right now you don't go another moment, but do away with your knowledge right where you are, then you will join hands and walk along together with the patriarchs, with the Buddhas, with the awakened ones. It is the most immediate approach to existence. You don't have to pray to God. You don't have to believe in a Messiah. You don't have to have faith in a holy book. You don't have to go through torturous disciplines. You have just to be. This very moment. Alert, away. Then whatever is happening around you, you listen to it, but you don't make it a knowledge. You don't say, the birds are singing. You listen to the sound. You relish the sound. You absorb it into your being. But you don't reduce it into words. And if this becomes your way of life, your very style of existing, then any moment, whenever you will be absolutely attuned, your totality present here and now, the explosion is going to happen. Look at the beautiful trees, but don't say they are beautiful. Is not looking enough? Is it necessary to bring language in? Can't you enjoy the beauties around you? Directly without any language? Just try it. And you have thousands of opportunities every day. Even in the hubbub of a marketplace, pass alert, without making any judgment, and it is one of the most wonderful experiences that even the noises in a marketplace don't disturb you. On the contrary, they seem to have a beauty of their own, a life of their own. Whether you are sitting or working, chopping wood or carrying water from a well, just be alert of everything that is going on around you without reducing it to knowledge. If you can avoid the words and knowledge from your eyes, which are like dust, they don't allow you to see that which is. And that which is the only authentic name for God. And it is not a goal somewhere else. It is always available, just you are not available to it. So the whole process of dhyan, chan or zen is simply to make you available to the existence which is always available to you. Just a meeting, an introduction, with the reality in which you are existing. So simple and so obvious. And all your miseries and afflictions and agonies, you will not be able to find even the traces of them. They were nightmares. And you were asleep, that's why they were happening. Now you are awake, and all the nightmares have disappeared. If you cannot yet be like this, don't go wrong in your knowledge. This is just for those who cannot see the obvious, who cannot do the simple. If you cannot yet be like this, don't go wrong in your knowledge. At least, if you cannot do the full process is dropping knowledge and becoming aware. If you cannot become aware, at least drop knowledge. That will help you immensely to become aware. If you cannot see right now, at least remove the dust from your eyes. That will help you to see with clarity whatsoever is available to us. And so much is available that only idiots can go to the temples and to the mosques and to the churches and to the synagogues. Any man of a little intelligence will find his temple wherever he is. This whole existence is nothing but temple, the holy ground. In the story of Moses, when he met God on Mount Sinai, as he reached close to him, he heard a shout, he started trembling because there was nobody but a green bush and inside the bush great flames of fire, and the bush was still green. The shout has come from the bush that Moses, keep your shoes off, you are on the holy ground. I have always wondered why Moses did not ask that, is there any ground which is not holy? Only this ground surrounding the bush is holy. But perhaps he was so much overwhelmed and people don't like to argue. If you come across to God, it is dangerous, and he has shouted so loudly Moses may have forgotten all. But whenever I have come to see that story, the only question that has arisen in me was how he could accept a line between the Holy Land and the unholy land. If the whole existence is full of godliness, then every place, wherever you are on the holy ground. Nanak was far better than Moses. He has gone to the Mohammedans' holy place, Mecca. And it was evening time, and he prepared his bed. His disciple Mardana arranged the bed. They were tired of a long journey. In the morning they will go into the temple and see the Kaaba and everything. But they have done one thing wrong. They were keeping their legs towards the Kaaba. Somebody informed the high priest that two persons have come. Their fame has reached ahead of them. The master is a man of great understanding, and the disciple is so merged with the master that it is difficult to say that they are two. They are almost one. But they are misbehaving by keeping their feet towards Kaaba. Mohammedans, even when they are dead anywhere in the world, living, there is no question of keeping your feet towards Kaaba. Even when dead, their graves are made in such a way that their heads are pointing towards Kaaba. The high priest was certainly very angry. He came with few people and he asked Nanak that we have heard you are a master, but this does not show an understanding of a master. You are keeping your feet towards the holy Kaaba. Nanak said, no problem. You can remove my feet wherever you feel God is not. Because wherever God is, it will be the same. So you can do. I am just lying down, you take my feet and move wherever you think God is not. I think this seems to be a historical incident. And this was enough for the high priest to apologize and say to Nanak, I am sorry. because I cannot find any place where God is not, and naturally you are right. Wherever you keep your feet, they will be pointing towards God. There is no way to avoid it. Forgive me. But the story has a metaphorical ending. The priest is so blind that he calls his man and turns Nanak's feet almost in a circle and is amazed that wherever he turns his feet, Kaaba also turns in the same direction. This must be mythological because Kaaba is just a stone. In this world, even men are so dull and dead, one cannot hope that a stone will be so intelligent. But it has the same meaning. Finally, they dropped the idea. They moved him all around, and the Kaaba moved wherever his feet were. It may not have happened, but it is true that wherever his feet were, God was there. But why Moses forgot about it? If existence is divine, then each moment and each inch of it is divine. There is no need to create cathedrals and great temples. These are done by blind people. Those who have eyes will find this vast starry sky, this beautiful earth. The greatest temple of God. If you look at this whole existence as a holy place, naturally your actions need not be of prayer and ritual. All that they need to be is of alertness and awareness in this very moment. Because God is available from all the sides. Just you are not here. He knocks at your doors, but finds you have gone somewhere else. You are never in your house. Perhaps you have completely forgotten where your house is. And you have not informed God of your new addresses. It will be very difficult because each moment you will have to inform him your address. It goes on changing. But if you can relax right now, just listen. The rain has started. Now the trees will be immensely happy. They will dance in the rain. Can you find any moment more precious? The rains have heard me. This whole existence is so beautiful. If you can drop your knowledge, your mind, and just merge in here and now, this is the great principle of all the awakened ones.